Coming up on this episode of the Wampus Lair Podcast, Jason returns as he and Carl invite Joe Hogan back into the lair. Jason has some thoughts on last episode's prequel discussion, but first, our trio dive into a spoiler-filled discussion on the Rebels season finale. So sit back, relax, and watch out for Wampas.
Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 120, Prequel Dreams Special Edition. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have the inimitable Leonard Nimoy to my William Shatner. We have Carl LeClaire.
Oh, Jason, glad to have you back. And what a nice little homage to the great Leonard Nimoy. Sadly, he passed away just a few days ago. And, you know, it's so sad. I literally saw him less than a year ago. I went to this really cool Boston Pops concert, and he was there as the narrator. I was like probably 20 feet from him, and he actually looked really good to me. For how old he is. Mm-hmm. He's really, because he's a Boston native, he was really funny too. He was great, great narrator for this concert. So very sad that he has passed. And
yes,
in my opinion, the best Star Trek character we have, except maybe Worf. But Spock is so cool. What a great actor, what a great man. So very sad that he's passed.
Indeed.
But as you all know, this is not a Star Trek podcast.
That is very true.
We are here to talk Star Wars, and here with us yet again to help me fight the good fight, we have the Captain Tarples to my Jason Hunt. We have Joe Hogan.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, but thank you even more for that very weird analogy. I'll take it.
Hey, yo, Jaja, stop it there.
No again,
Jaja.
Yusa, go into the buses. Yusa and Big Doo-Doo this time.
He's pretty awesome, man. He got his licks in on Grievous.
Yeah,
he did. Episode, so that's, I'm a lot more flattered this time than any other role you've given me up until this point, Carl.
No problem, Jar Jar. So, everyone, thank you for listening in tonight. I am super jazzed. I think both you guys are super jazzed. We're here to kind of talk. Jason really wanted to give us some feedback in light of our last episode that he couldn't be with us on, and he's got some input on Joe and my points on some of the things we wanted to see out of the prequels. But before we get to any of that, there's this television program on right now on the thing called the TV, and it's referred to as Star Wars Rebels. That was my William Shatner. He's
It's a trap.
Anyway, and wow. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know him, but but we really, this is such a great time to be recording because just last night the Rebels finale was on. I can't believe the season's already over, but luckily we're gonna get to see the premiere in just a few months at C7. But this finale was freaking awesome. What a perfect way to cap off this first season. General reactions, go, Jason.
Oh my frigging goodness. It was fantastic, amazing. Didn't see that death coming, and holy crap, that's Ahsoka.
Oh yeah, by the way, if you haven't seen this yet, spoiler alert.
Whoops.
For us to mention that beforehand. So if you hadn't seen it and you just heard that, we apologize. But from this point forward, no, we will be talking the ins and outs of the episode.
Yes. Sorry about that.
Hashtag spoilers alert 5 minutes ago.
Right. Yeah, I mean, basically the exact same reaction, although one more extra one. Definitely didn't see the Inquisitor going out the way he did, and, you know, at all yet, really. I mean, it's so early in the grand scheme of things, but so that was a big shock. Fulcrum being Ahsoka, not so much a big shock, because, you know, that's kind of been a very popular theory lately, so everybody kind of saw that coming, but it's still pretty awesome to see it finally revealed, and we'll get to see her in action next season. But the big thing for me is that it seems like Darth Vader is now going to be in the forefront, you know, in the coming seasons, hopefully. That's the impression that I got from it, that, you know, they're not screwing around anymore, and now Vader is going to be the one actively hunting down rebels. So,
right, which is interesting because he's gone to Lothal, but the idea I get is that the crew of the Ghost is going to be leaving Lothal.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. We'll see what happens there. But Carl, general impressions from you?
Oh man, I mean, I literally just finished watching this, as you guys know, about 20 minutes ago. So I just put it on and I couldn't watch it last night. But it was amazing. Now, Joe, you said a lot of people were kind of expecting Ahsoka. I did not see that coming at all. I did not expect to see her at all in the series, let alone I thought Fulcrum was either Bail Organa or Leia. That's who I was expecting it to be. So that blew my mind. I think that's so, so cool.
Well, people had,
and she looks great. She looks like she looks perfectly, like, because it's been, what, now 30 years?
No, only 10.
No. 10. Oh, yeah. No, yes, right. 10 years.
From Clone Wars, 10.
That's right.
More like 15, I think. No. Yeah.
Actually,
like
you're right.
14. Yeah, you're right. Like 14 years.
Okay.
Because Ezra was born on
Empire Day.
And yes. And 14. So you're right, Jason.
14, 15, something like that.
Right. So a while back, there was a Fulcrum appearance in one of the episodes, and people were actually able to de-encrypt the sound and bring it back for the most part to its original, like, original recording before it was messed with, and it was Ashley Eckstein. So it sounded exactly like Ahsoka, naturally.
Right.
So for the most part, people kind of saw that coming.
Yeah. And then there had been a ton of different theories and, you know, finding clues on, you know, in the symbols on boxes that Fulcrum has them go pick up and stuff like that. You know, the Star Wars fans are without a doubt some of the most, some of the smartest at finding out what is going on before the creators want us to know. So, but oh my goodness. I think the biggest surprise to me, because we knew Darth Vader was going to show up in the episode. You know, the Ahsoka idea had been thrown around for quite a while. But the biggest surprise to me was the fact that the Inquisitor died.
Yeah, already, right?
Already. I mean, we've had him for a full season.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about 8 episodes in the season, something like that. So it's not like we haven't seen him around a lot. But it's just really interesting because now we have to go to Darth Vader, and what does that mean for the rebels and for the Empire? Because if we're going to get Darth Vader as the main, you know, pursuer of these rebels instead of the Inquisitor, how are they going to be able to play that off? You know,
yeah.
Is he just going to show up as the, you know, Ghost blasts out of the spaceport and leaves again? You know, is that going to, are we going to keep getting him entering the Hoth hangar as the Millennium Falcon escapes the planet, you know, week after week? Or what's going to, the deal going to be?
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens
now
that the Inquisitor's dead.
Yeah.
I wonder how involved James Earl Jones is going to be in that too. Like, I wonder.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty cool they got him back to do the breathing for this episode. Yeah. You know, that's James Earl Jones, right?
I mean, that's
no, it's probably David Prowse. No, David, you're doing it wrong. Yeah, you bring David Prowse in on it. He'd be like 3 weeks before the episode even comes out. He'd be like, Ahsoka Tano's back. She's Fulcrum. Be like, no, Dave, you weren't supposed to tell anybody that. I'm just going off the rumor. You remember, like, when he was on set, like, he was the main person they did not want to know that, you know, in Empire, that he was Luke's father, because he had a way of blabbing to the media. Anyway, but yeah, no, I did not see the Inquisitor's death coming. So, first off, I think it's worth mentioning how awesome that duel was, in my opinion. Oh, yeah. I thought it was so cool. And, you know, getting to see how much Kanan has matured in his fighting style was incredible. And the way he kind of, you know, he uses Ezra's blaster and lightsaber combo so well. And, you know, Ezra even says, you know, like, wow, why didn't I think of that? Or something. Like, it was, I mean, that was just so, and what a well shot scene. Like, even, like, you know, Joe, you're the artist here, but, like, artistically pleasing, I thought. And it reminded me a lot of, obviously, like, the duel on Feed, just the, you know, that generator feel to it, the space in which they're fighting. You know, it was really cool. And I love when, you know, and then Kanan's using the two lightsabers. I mean, Kanan has become a force to reckon with. And, you know, I think he got some unfair raps when we had him take on, who did we have him in a matchup with, Jason? Do you remember?
Was it Ahsoka?
Oh, no. Yeah. Was it Ahsoka?
I don't remember.
But he got, like, I mean, he got the floor wiped with him. And I think that's, yeah. I think in light of this episode, that's a little unfair. I really like Kanan. And I just thought that was such a great, great duel. And then, you know, I finally found out what's stronger than fear. The Force. So again, you've got, you know, this is what Rebels has been so good at this season is capturing that mystical feeling of the Force again that we kind of have missed out on for a long time because it's not really in the prequels or in the Clone Wars that much. So I thought that was, I mean, that was a really cool little statement of belief, if you will, to kind of almost tie it to like Luke's in Return of the Jedi. I am a Jedi like my father before me. This is kind of like a new assessment of Kanan's truth. You know, his relationship with Ezra, his training of Ezra, his encounters with the Inquisitor have made him into a stronger Jedi again. I thought that was really cool. And that great shot of, you know, the Inquisitor is hanging there and he's standing over him with the two lightsabers crossed before him, you know, very Anakin in the beginning of Rots. And, you know, it looked so cool. What are you laughing at?
Rots.
Revenge of the Sith. Yeah.
You call it Ezra?
Esb, yeah. Have you guys? What's your favorite Star Wars movie? Esb, and tapum, outk, outk. Attack of the Clones is a German film. I thought that was a great shot, and for a second I did think he was going to kill him. Like I was like, oh yeah, he's definitely going to kill him.
Right.
And then when he deignites the lightsabers, I was like, all right, of course he's going to help him, or at least like leave him there. But then I thought that was really cool when the Inquisitor's like, you will find that there are things more like to be more afraid of than death. I wonder if he's implying Vader, because right, like that's what the Empire then brings in.
I was going to ask you the same thing. What do you guys think he meant by that?
Yeah. I think Vader. I think he meant the overwhelming power of Vader and maybe even the Emperor as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That was my immediate take. What do you think, Jason?
Oh, I would agree with that because you know, it's double edged because he's warning Kanan about, you know, what's coming. And he's taking himself out of the equation. He's, you know, choosing death over the things that are worse than death, you know, because he doesn't want to have to go back and face Vader and Palpatine after this failure, because it is a failure big time. So, you know, it's sort of a double-edged comment there, you know. You may have figured out that, you know, fear and the fear of death, you know, isn't that powerful. You know, the Force is more powerful, but there are worse things than that, you know. And he goes, and that's why I'm, you know, checking out. Bye, you know. So that was my takeaway from it. So did you have any thoughts on that, Joe?
I kind of thought about the talk that Yoda gives Anakin in Phantom Menace, because Kanan was talking a lot about fear in the middle of the duel, and you know the Inquisitor's like, well, there's stuff that's a whole lot worse than fear, because you know if you take that, you know, you know, you go along with that train of thought. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. Suffering is a lot worse than death. And so I kind of almost took it as, you know, maybe you're not worried about being afraid anymore, but that might mean that you're already on that path to the dark side. And then once you fall to the dark side, you're then kind of stuck in that cycle. Mm. So I don't know. I kind of like your assessment a little better, though. Like, be afraid of the Emperor, be afraid of Vader, because they will make your lives a lot worse than just ending it.
Yeah, and you know, think of to the first episode where we got Tarkin, which was that last episode or two episodes ago?
It was two episodes ago,
right, when we see the Inquisitor kill the two officers for failing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and oh my gosh, I'm always blanking on his name, Agent Callus. You know, he's kind of shocked by this as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Inquisitor knows, and he's Vader's errand boy, so I think he knows what's coming to him, even if he gets out of this alive. I don't think the Emperor and Vader are going to be pleased. He knows he's pretty much dead anyway.
Right.
So I think he goes the easier route. But then again, oh God.
The path of the dark side is easier, more seductive.
Right. Real quick, both of you, I want to get your impression of this, because this is the one thing I would not like if they bring the Inquisitor back. Right, like they do a Darth Maul, and we got the Inquisitor, right, with like metal legs or something. I personally would hate it. Like, I love the Inquisitor. I wish we already had more of him. But if they bring him back, that is gonna. I don't know. I don't want that. I just don't want that.
Agreed.
Well, the thing with the Inquisitor is, Inquisitor is a title, so there can be multiple Inquisitors.
Exactly. That's not his name. For all we know, his name's Herbert. So.
Herbert the Inquisitor,
right? And or you know, yeah. Just to me, that just that's what that's the name that screams at me when he's on screen. You know,
Herbert,
and that's why he's so angry, because he hates his name.
What did you guys think about being above Unalist? Not Unalist,
Mustafar.
Mustafar, and not getting to see Mustafar.
I was a little disappointed. It made for some great background, you know, a backdrop in space. It was really awesome. But I was a little disappointed because when I figured out we were going there, I was like, okay, well, then they've got him in a, you know, complex on the planet.
Yeah.
That was my first thought. But no, he's just up in Tarkin Star Destroyer above the planet. You know, obviously that's, you know, they didn't have the money to go and create all this other stuff, you know, but I was a little disappointed because it would have been cool to see another planet that we've seen in both the films and then the Clone Wars, you know, get to see this another planet, you know, how it's interpreted for Rebels. It would have been the first, I think.
Yeah.
That we would have seen in all three, you know, the films, Clone Wars and Rebels. So I thought that would have been cool, but I was a little disappointed, but the show worked for me, so I wasn't overly disappointed.
Yeah. To be honest, I don't know why we even had to be at Mustafar.
Not to say that
I didn't like it, but to me, that was one little like, oh, remember this moment where it didn't add anything to the plot. It was like you said, Jason, I thought it added to some really cool background shots to like the little dog fight at the end. Mm. So again, I don't care that we were, but not disappointed we didn't necessarily see the plan either. Again, I just don't understand why is Tarkin at Mustafar. I don't even get that plot point.
Yeah. But Hera said at the end of last episode, it's where Jedi go to die. And so that was an interesting thing. You know, it's where...
Wait, when did she say that, Jason?
She said that at the end of last episode when figured out that that Kanan is being taken to Mustafar. And she goes, oh, well, Kanan told me about it. He said it's where all Jedi go to die. And then that's when they close out the episode.
Interesting.
That was an interesting point, and I wonder if maybe we'll see Mustafar show back up.
But what Jedi ever died there? That kind of never really made a whole lot of sense to me.
I don't know.
I mean, obviously, in a sense, Anakin did, but nobody knows that.
No, he was right. Darth Vader already, though.
That's true, technically. And also, nobody would know.
Right.
It would be interesting if they've got a facility there where they torture and kill Jedi.
Yes. Can we mention the torture scene? I mean, that's why wasn't there
hundreds of those racks lined up?
Why wasn't there a scan grid? like from The Empire Strikes Back. Just curious. Just whatever. All right, moving on.
Okay, Carl.
So how cool was that too, though, when the like the Rebel fleet showed up? I wish we could have
entire Rebel fleet. I know. You know, five ships.
Well, it's one of the cells, and I thought that was really cool. But I just wish we could have heard this.
You listeners at home are really missing out on a dance that Carl is doing.
Yep.
All right, you guys get it.
Yes. I would have been okay with hearing that.
I don't think it would have met. Actually, I mean, obviously, it probably wouldn't have matched the high level of intense action already happening as they showed up.
Right.
But you know, they could have easily just as well done this. If they rolled in playing this.
You know, out of hyperspace, you know, choppers blaring it from the speakers of the ship, you know.
Joe, how badly do you want to leave right now?
I've already left. I'm on my way to Timbuktu at the moment.
Oh, man. But yeah, no, that was really cool. I liked that we got to see that. You know, just a general thought on Rebels so far, and I want to get your guys' take on this as well. And Jason, we kind of talked about this a couple episodes ago when we did kind of like our Rebels check-in up to that point. But I just feel like Rebels has done a great job of just giving us that fun Star Wars that we've always loved. And I'm not saying that over and against anything else. I'm just saying, for me, this is the most fun I've had with Star Wars in a while. I loved the Clone Wars, don't get me wrong. But every single week of every 13, all 13 of these episodes, or is it 14?
13 yeah. plus the... Or maybe it's 14 plus the two-parter. So
right, but these episodes, every one of them has grabbed my attention, and you know they're so much fun. I think I mentioned this on our last episode when we talked Rebels, Jason. But it just reminds me of when I was a kid and kind of like the little fun little storylines I would have come up with. They're always just like, they're kind of simple little plots in the sense of like, oh, we've got to go rescue Kanan, or oh, we've got to go blow up this factory, oh, we've got to go steal this or that, right? Like, it's just these fun little missions where it's really fun and to watch our characters do this, our heroes do this. And then there's always some level of depth to each of the episodes as well. Like, there's a teaching point or something else to like take it just a little bit deeper. Does that resonate with you guys?
Joe, I'll let you start.
I honestly wasn't paying attention for a second. Sorry, I got
that's all right. No worries. Jason, what do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Joe, you're not getting a point.
That's all right.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, I do agree that Rebels has definitely got that element of fun back with these weekly episodes of Star Wars content. Obviously, the Clone Wars couldn't really do that too much because of the subject matter and the story direction it had to go. But I'm really glad that we were able to get it with Rebels. You know, it has been a lot of fun. It's simple, you know, overarching stories, but, you know, filled with, like you said, you know, depth of character and, you know, great interactions and banter. And, you know, it's been a really fun season to watch. And I can only sit here and hope that the next season is even half as good. Not that I think it won't be as good. You know, I'm sure it'll get better. But, you know, if it's just half as good, I'll be perfectly fine. So,
Yeah.
I think it'll only go up from here, because what's interesting is Clone Wars kind of had a rough start and then slowly got better and better and better as it went. Whereas, you know, Rebels, while shorter than a Clone Wars season, has been consistently good the whole way through. And it's, for the most part, it's the same people at the helm. And I think they're only going to, you know, it's only going to get better as we go also. Just, you know, the same way. Go ahead, Carl.
No, go ahead, Joe.
I mean, I was just going to say, what I always found more interesting about Rebels on top of Clone Wars is, I might have even said it on, you know, here in Moffat's Lair before, but... there's something inherently more interesting about characters when you don't know what's going to happen to them.
Yes.
When Clone Wars has been, you know, all these characters that you know, the ones that are going to show up in episode 3, we know that they'll be fine. You know, oh, Padme's kidnapped again, and she has to figure out the poison Snapple mystery, what's going on with that. Hopefully she makes it out okay. But these none of these characters are in the original. You okay, Carl?
Yeah.
None of the characters in Rebel, with the exception of Bail Organa now and Vader and Tarkin, none of them are around come A New Hope. So
right,
anything can happen. And even like Inquisitor. You know, for the longest time, I was saying what's interesting about both the villains and the characters is that any one of them can go. And here we go. We just lost the Inquisitor this finale. So like, right, there's just something. Go ahead, Jason.
And of course, for the promotional material leading up to last night's finale, you know, there was this tagline, you know, who will fall? And I was like, oh God, please don't be Kanan. Please don't be Kanan. Please don't be Kanan. But we had that option of it being Kanan. Exactly. You know. There was a legitimate concern because we don't know what happens to him, and he is sort of kind of playing the Obi-Wan-esque figure, and we know what happened to Obi-Wan in A New Hope. So yeah. It wouldn't have been a shock if he had died.
I thought that was a cool little image they put together of the Who Will Fall. It reminded me of from Fan Days when they had that like thing in the sand. Remember they expanded it each day? That was Fan Days, right?
That was
Celebration.
Oh, it was Celebration. 6. Okay, that's right. Okay. But they, you know, they had that Who Will Fall, and they kept expanding it every day until the last day. That was right. Really cool.
And like half of those characters died that season.
Right.
It was a huge amount.
Yeah.
It was.
Like one of them died at that convention because they showed the first episode.
Oh, that's right. Adi Gallia.
Yep. Like, they didn't miss a beat with that.
Yeah.
So can I ask you guys something?
Sure.
Well, it's a two-parter. A, how inevitable do you think Ahsoka versus Vader is going to be? Okay. And when is it going to be if you think it's going to happen?
All right, I'm tackling this first, Jason. I'm sorry.
Go for it.
Also, Joe, when you say two things, you should probably go one and then two, not A and then B, but whatever.
Two things. Seven and Q. Go.
I like it.
So actually, I just quickly spitballed that to Jason real quick right before we even started recording. And I go, oh my gosh, Ahsoka's back. I hope Vader kills her. And I was like, wait, hold on. That sounded really bad. Not because I don't like her.
That was the first thing he said.
Literally, that was the first thing I said to him.
Start the Skype call.
But yeah, I hope Vader kills her. Not because I don't like Ahsoka, because I think I mentioned this in the past anyway. Vader killing Ahsoka would say a lot of how Anakin is gone. I think that's so important. And I think, this is my opinion, I think it's really important that maybe she might get under his skin a little bit if she knows it's Anakin, but I think it's very important that he doesn't waver too much. I think Luke really needs to be the one who calls out to Anakin in a way that no one else has in these past 20 years, you know, since, you know, in between Rots and, yeah, I hope, honestly, I'd like to see Ahsoka killed at the end of the next season. I'd like to see her stick around for a whole season. I think she'd be fun, but I'd really like to see how far Vader has gone to the dark side. That's my opinion. I think this is a great plot point bringing her back because it'll do a lot for who Darth Vader is more than anything else. That's my opinion. Jason, what do you think?
I think the confrontation is inevitable. I think there will be two or three.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Because part of it depends on how they take Ahsoka, how integral she becomes, and how fast she becomes integral. If she's off, you know, working with other cells, you know, come next season, the timeline gets pushed back. But if she's right there with the crew of the Ghost, you know, getting involved and teaching Kanan and Ezra and figuring stuff out with them right off the bat, the timeline definitely shrinks because you have to take her away from them. Unfortunately, you know, it's sad, and it's not, you know, because she's a great character and all that, but you have to take her away from them. If she, you know, sort of checks in, you know, every so often, you know, does some teachings, they go on a mission or something, I would say no later than this. The latest I could see this stretching out is the end of season 3. But season two finale could happen. I think it would be interesting if we try and hold off on a Vader Ahsoka encounter until the end of season two, give everybody that big, you know, oh my gosh, are we going to see her die here? And then she escapes at the end of season two. And then season three starts and she starts figuring out who Vader is. But before she can like tell anybody, then they have another encounter and he kills her. That would have been my storytelling of it. You know, so I think we've got about a season's worth of time that we can play with here. As far as when she falls.
Yeah. Joe, what is your opinion? What do you think?
I'm kind of in the same camp as Jason. I think that the earliest it's going to happen is it would be that big season two finale, oh my God moment that, you know, we just had last night on season one. Like, that's going to be the big, you know, brain explosion moment for season two. I don't think she's going to get away from it from their first encounter. And I think season three is going to be our main characters falling like dominoes. Because they are going to have to go, and I don't think they're all going to go at once. And I think it's what they're... hoping that they're going to do is
Joe, go ahead.
No, I just kind of hope they spend a little bit more time developing the less important characters. So, like, let's see a little bit more about Zeb's backstory. Let's see a little bit more Sabine this season, you know, season two. And let's flesh them out a little bit more, and then this way, in season three, once they, you know, start dropping like flies, there's a little bit more of an emotional impact.
Yeah.
Shut up!
Are you done, Joe?
Nailed it.
Okay. No, I was just thinking, what was I going to say?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, so Joe, you just mentioned, you know, that obviously eventually they're all going to have to go, but...
I don't think they necessarily have to, but they could. I think they're going to.
Yeah, but unless, you know, we see episode 7 in, you know, in December and Ezra's in it, right?
Yeah. I mean, the same age as Luke.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd be in his 40s at this point.
No, a little more than that.
Yeah,
Luke are the same age.
Yeah.
Like almost to the day.
Oh, that's right.
It is to the day. It's Empire Day.
That's right. Yeah.
We're on the same day.
Something I was thinking then, guys, in light of them bringing Ahsoka back, you think we could see a team up of Asajj Ventress and Jar Jar? I mean,
if we're lucky, I hope so.
But I mean, obviously, because Ahsoka was an extremely popular character, and I think almost equally as popular was Asajj Ventress, you know, as a Clone Wars villain. And she, we don't know what's going to happen to her until we read Clone Wars Resolutions coming out on Star Wars Day.
There is that novel coming out. Is it this summer? Is that?
Yes.
Okay. But
so,
you know,
and yeah, she's a wild card now.
Yeah. What I'd like to see, guys. This is just my thoughts. And give me your comments. I would like to see, you know, now that we have Ahsoka back, I'd like to see Vader kill her eventually, because again, what I've said earlier, you know, I think what it says about Vader. But I would also like to see Asajj come back and have Kanan kill her, because that'll show us how formidable Kanan has become. Because Asajj is, you know, I mean, she's kind of the real deal.
She's not a villain anymore, though. Like, she's kind of out of that whole...
Point. Yeah, that's a good point.
That's why she's a wild card, because you don't really know... what she's going to do. She's more self-serving now than she is necessarily a villain.
Yeah. Yeah. So then I hope we see her get married to Jar Jar. And just like
that is the weirdest thing you have ever said.
Wait, who is Jar Jar's girlfriend?
Jason, I'm not hearing a no from you, though.
I'm trying to get that image out of my brain, and it's not going.
Yusa goes bombad.
Oh my lord! Don't ever say that again.
They both have the same amount of hair.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm just happy that Hondo's going to be back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a great character.
So I'm thrilled that we're going to see Hondo Ohnaka, and he was one of the main characters from the Clone Wars that I figured would be easy to bring back. So. I'm glad they decided to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I'm just so jazzed for where season two is going to take us.
It's going to be awesome.
And it's something
we don't
have
a date yet, right? It's going to be the same time next year, September, October.
No, no. We'll get the premiere at Star Wars Celebration.
Really?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
I had no idea.
Such That's a awesome. Noob.
Yeah, we're going to get the premiere at Celebration.
You'll probably miss it at the arts table, though.
Nerd. I might sneak away.
Nerd.
I might leave Chris to his own devices.
You could do that. Although it'll probably be like in the evening, so maybe the art tables will start closing. Anyways,
that's a good point.
But I'm going to say it'll be like a May start, and so we'll get like a summer season type of thing.
I had no idea.
That'd be really cool. Yeah, I'd love that. But something I wanted to just real quickly comment, and we can wrap up our Rebels thoughts. But Joe, you mentioned earlier how you know, everybody's kind of we don't, you know, since these are all basically new characters except for like Vader and Tarkin, and obviously Organa, you know, this can go anywhere. But I think what I'm also enjoying about this that not necessarily happened in Clone Wars, and again, this isn't knocking Clone Wars, but Rebels it's just a consistent story of a set of characters, right? Like we're being told a story, as opposed to like Clone Wars, it was like, okay, here's a random story, which again, it kind of makes sense. It's kind of that serial feel. I think that was kind of the purpose of Clone Wars. But what I like about Rebels is that we are getting this consistent story with characters that are being developed, their relationships are being developed, and then everything else is background to that. So like even, you know, these little like nods to, you know, the something from the prequels or a nod to something from the OT, it's all just in light of where our characters are taking us, where their story is taking us. And I think that gives it so much more weight and so much more excitement to it. So I just like that we're getting a really fun story. So,
yeah. I concur. I don't have anything to add to that, but yeah.
So
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to season two already. So
yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I'm sure you guys both remember this. Jason, obviously you and I were sitting right next to one another, but when we got the, you know, the Clone Wars premiere for season five, or was it season six?
It was five.
Season five.
Yeah,
right.
Season
five, the premiere of that. Watching that together, that was so cool. I'm sure the premiere of Rebels that they're going to show us at C7 is going to be equally awesome. You know, I guarantee we see Vader in it. Well, I shouldn't say I guarantee. Who am I to guarantee anything? I'm a nobody on the Wampus Lair, but...
They've thrown all sorts of funny curveballs at us this season, so I wouldn't guarantee anything.
I hope,
except that it'll be awesome.
I just hope Snaggletooth's in it again, just like they put him in the, you know, at the Clone Wars season 5 premiere. We got Snaggletooth. I hope Snaggletooth is in the Rebels season 2 premiere. I just think that'd be hilarious. What a great point of continuity.
All right. Well, we have another topic we need to get to, so why don't we jump into that?
Yeah, why don't we? So for those of you who listen to us frequently, you'll know that last episode, Jason wasn't able to be here. So I had Joe come on, and he and I kind of just talked about some of the things we wish we had seen in the prequels, and mostly story points that we think would have made for stronger films. And we did a pretty darn good job, Joe, of like being PC the whole time.
I like to think so.
You know? And Jason gave us his seal of approval. As a prequel man, he did not feel offended. So I think we did okay. And that was not the intention anyway. The intention was not to belittle the prequels, but simply bring up things that Joe and I were, you know, sad we didn't see, or things that we wish had gone differently. So, and Jason, you said you had a lot of comments and you wanted to come on and talk about them, which I think is great. And
yes,
we were able to pull Joe away from his mediocre art job to, to like,
which
come
one?
Back on. Yeah, exactly.
All Whatever. Of them.
Yeah, all of them.
As he says, as he sketches something while he talks on the microphone.
Right. Jason, so I'm just going to kind of give some of like the big things that we talked about in each of the, you know, episodes 1 through 3, and then let you kind of just raise your points, raise your questions, whatever it may be.
Sure.
I think in episode 1, Joe, again, like jump in if I miss something. I'm just trying to hit the big things that I want to reiterate everything we did last episode. But I think the big thing from episode 1 is that we both wanted to see Obi-Wan discover Anakin and basically fight for him to be trained as a Jedi. I think that was the main story point we thought was kind of missing from episode 1 was, you know, Anakin and Obi-Wan creating an early connection that, you know, would then be continue to be established through the rest of the films. Is that fair?
Yeah, sounds about right to me. We disagreed on how it would go down.
Right.
I think you had said that you would have been okay with without it being Qui-Gon.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. And then I had said that Obi-Wan should have gone with Qui-Gon.
Right.
And just he should have formed that connection with Anakin instead of Qui-Gon doing it.
Right.
So. And you guys brought up a lot of points throughout your discussion of all three of the prequels about Obi-Wan and Anakin's relationship. How you wish, you know, he'd been there for this, or that they'd done more of that, you know, that sort of thing, and they'd built up that relationship more. And one of the, and I have one big, while I agree those were great scenes to see, I have one big issue with that concept, because at the end of the day, Anakin needs to fall to the dark side, and if he's too close with Obi-Wan, that's not going to happen. Because Obi-Wan will prevent, you know, the friendship there that they're developing will prevent him from falling to the dark side. Because, you know, and this is sort of more of an overall concept idea rather than just dealing with episode one here, because I think it would have been cool if Obi-Wan had gone with Qui-Gon to Tatooine and stuff like that. And maybe, instead of the scene in the junkyard where Anakin's talking to Padme, Anakin's talking to Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan's like, you're kind of a funny kid. You're weird. And then they get the new hyperdrive generator, and they take it back to the ship, and Qui-Gon's like, you know, okay, get this installed. I'm going to go back for the boy. And Obi-Wan's like, really? Okay. You know, I think that could work still. Sort of the, you know, maybe not quite as, you know, oh my gosh, Qui-Gon, another pathetic life form. But, you know, like, you're going to bring a kid into the middle of this very important mission, you know, idea. But I think that would have been interesting, you know, kind of cool. I'm trying to think of other specifics that you guys mentioned. But I think in general, and you mentioned this a lot more with episode two, I think, the idea of their relationship and, you know, doing more, you know, becoming more friends rather than master and apprentice. And you can only go so far with that because Anakin needs to feel isolated and he needs to feel like he can't confide with Obi-Wan on certain things. And that's what, you know, gets him to the place where he accepts some of the ideas Palpatine is feeding him and turns to the dark side. So there's a balance there that I think, you know, could have been walked a little bit better. I agree, but they, you know, I don't want to go too far there. Although I think it would have been cooler if at the end of the movie, rather than Obi-Wan just talking to Yoda about how he will train Anakin, if the rest of the council was there too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have been good. And, you know, it's more like he's, you know, staking his reputation or the reputation of Qui-Gon, you know, on the line to take on this boy and to train him. So, you know, and it's not just to kindly old Master Yoda. It's to the entire council there, you know, that's assembled there. And, you know, that would be, I think, more of a stand that he'd have to take rather than just, you know, kneeling down to talk to Master Yoda. So,
well, I'm going to respond to that.
Okay.
Joe, you're obviously welcome to as well.
Okay.
If you want, I'm just saying, you know, I still think Obi-Wan, the way Obi-Wan's relationship is with Anakin in episode one is a really weak story point. That's why I wanted to see him discovering Anakin. I wanted to see him fighting for Anakin. I think, because again, what George Lucas, I'm just going to be blunt here, what he foolishly did was he wrote a bad story point there because Obi-Wan says to Luke in Return of the Jedi, when I first met him, I was amazed at how powerful the Force was with him. We don't see that at all in episode one. Where does that come from? What do you mean? So he, George Lucas, contradicts himself with the story we're told in episode one. And that's why I think Obi-Wan needs to be the one to discover him and create that bond, because without that bond, what he says to Luke in Return of the Jedi is it's just words. It means nothing. Because he's wary of Anakin the entire time of episode one. You know, they all sense it. Why don't you? You know, it's not. It is in no way an acceptance of who Anakin is. It's a complete rejection of who Anakin is. So there's no amazement.
He can still be amazed at how powerful he was in the Force and not like the kid.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
But I mean, this is where I think Joe's idea of him going and being on Tatooine with Qui-Gon would have made some more sense. Because I think he needs to see, you know, Anakin, you know, win the pod race. But I think Obi-Wan shouldn't know about the bets that Qui-Gon is making if we go that way. So Qui-Gon's still making his bets. He's still trying to free the kid. But Obi-Wan doesn't know. And so Obi-Wan thinks, you know, oh, well, we're doing this. He's going to help us get the parts, and then we're going to leave, mm-hmm. you know. And when Qui-Gon says, no, we're taking the boy, then Obi-Wan resigns himself to the fact that, okay, I need to, you know, not, you know, hold this kid at arm's length, that sort of thing. Yeah, I can see some of your points, and I concede some of it, but I don't think it needs to be, you know, this, you know, brilliant connection at the very beginning, because then, you know, why would Anakin betray Obi-Wan later?
I mean, that's what makes it a true human tragedy, which I think is far deeper than what we got.
I gotta argue that point against what you said before, Jason, that they shouldn't be too close. I think that's what would make it really gut-wrenching, is if they were really close. Because also, keep in mind, like, he's obviously very close to Padme, but he ends up essentially murdering her. And it's because of his own insecurities and trust issues and all that stuff that he can't get past, and his fears. I don't think it would be all that unbelievable, because if you think about it, Anakin, for the most part, but the Tusken stuff aside, Anakin tries to be a good person for the most part. And sometimes good people do bad things. Good people mess up. Good people, you know, lose their way. And essentially, that's kind of what Luke saw in Vader. Vader, he saw that, oh, okay, well, he may be doing all these awful things, but somewhere in there, that's not who he is. There is a better person in there. And I think that just because if he had that deeper relationship with Obi-Wan, like, yeah, maybe it would be harder to believe that someone could do that. But at the same time, like, people that are good people can do really bad things and really surprise you. And you know what I mean? So I honestly think it would be a lot sadder.
Oh, it would be.
He did have that connection.
It would be a lot sadder, but I don't think Obi-Wan would have let it get to the point where Anakin would have even had the opportunity to fall to the dark side if they were closer. So that's my issue. Is it's not Anakin's you know, betrayal, I guess, so much. It's more Obi-Wan's side, because you know, when we get to episode two. You know, sort of episode two, and definitely in episode three, I think Obi-Wan thinks that they're good friends. You know, Obi-Wan definitely thinks that they're good friends, but of course he's been raised in the Jedi Order, and, you know, attachments are sort of at arm's length the entire time. And so, you know, he doesn't have the intimate friendship that Anakin knows can exist outside of the Order, even though they are close and they are like brothers. I think Obi-Wan thinks they're good friends, but he's also knows Anakin has issues, and so he wants to let Anakin deal with those and not bring them up, because then that's, you know, would have to, you know, go to the council, and he could get even into even more trouble with that. And so I think part of it is Obi-Wan, part of what Obi-Wan feels so much guilt about in the OT is that he didn't do more.
The point I take against the issue I would have with that, though, is, you know, Anakin, if Anakin and Obi-Wan are too close, right, like, Obi-Wan would certainly stop it. I don't think that's the case at all. Because, I mean, again, to put this in purely human terms, which is what Star Wars is supposed to be, a human story. Put that in human terms. You see somebody you really care about, who you're really close with, starting to make some really bad decisions. You cannot stop them unless you literally physically lock them up or something, right? Like, people are going to fall with or without you. And I think the fact that he does fall, even in spite of his closeness to Obi-Wan, makes it far more of the tragedy. So Obi-Wan can't stop him. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how much he tries. He cannot stop. Once Anakin, you know, again, like I kind of reiterated this with Joe in our last one. Like, I love the reason for Anakin's fall, right? It's Padme. It's ultimately his fear of losing Padme. And I think that's the perfect story point. And that overriding fear trumps everything. His intimacy with Obi-Wan. And I think maybe more so in episode 3 is where we get more of those. You know, Joe and I both talked about how in episode 2 there is a lot more transparency between Anakin and Obi-Wan, but I think in episode 3 is where you can really start to, maybe that transparency starts to diminish, right? Where, like, Anakin does start keeping things from him, right? Like, he kills Dooku in cold blood, like we have it in episode 3, while Obi-Wan's unconscious, and he keeps that from him, right? Like, in episode 3 is where we start to see Anakin withholding information from Obi-Wan. So that's when it starts to slip. So that, and I think that would be a great split, too, between 2 and 3, is 2, we have these two very transparent characters, where in 3, all of a sudden now, Anakin's starting to tell him, like, withhold things from him. I think that would be more telling. So, I get that point, for sure.
Yeah. That's just a very delicate and difficult line to walk, because you got to be careful either way, I think.
Yeah.
But you had some other points that you wanted to did you have to bring up for Phantom Menace, or
nothing really big. I mean, unless there's something you remember we were saying. I mean, the only other things I noticed right now in my notes is we have obviously more Darth Maul. I think, you know, again, creating him to be a more threatening villain would have been great. And
more central to the overarching story of the prequels, not just Phantom Menace,
right?
Was one of our big ones.
So
yeah, I mean, I understand the point. I think an extra scene with Darth Maul would have been great, or just extended one scene where he, you know, threatens or kills somebody would have been great. I know you mentioned that, but having Darth Maul die at the end of Phantom Menace, I think, gives Palpatine some breathing room now that he's just become, you know, Chancellor, and sort of lulls the Jedi into the sense of complacency.
That's a good point.
Otherwise, the rise of the Separatists gets too suspicious, you know, because we've still got this other Sith out there. You know, is he behind this? So, you know, we've got both Sith out there still. You know, are they behind this? You know, but I think having the apprentice die at the end of Phantom Menace it insulates Palpatine a bit more and sort of, you know, calms the Jedi's, you know, recent, the Sith have been extinct for millennia, you know, they still don't want to have to deal with something big like that yet. And so, well, he's dead. That's fine. We'll just sort of keep an eye out and see if the other one does anything to surface, but we're not really going to pursue it now because we've taken care of this one. And so that insulates Palpatine and gives him that space to, you know, sink his claws into the chancellery, you know, the chancellorship. So, obviously, I think Darth Maul is a great character, and I like the fact that they brought him back in the Clone Wars. You know, that was really interesting and neat to me. But I think having him die, or, you know, appear to die at the end of Phantom Menace, I think works well, because you need to have that space for Palpatine. And Darth Maul is his lackey. So the Phantom Menace is Palpatine, and, you know, Darth Maul is the lackey of the Menace. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think one more extra scene or an extended scene would have been great, though.
Yeah. Who wouldn't have liked to see Darth Maul do something kind of badass in The Phantom Menace?
Right.
Besides just fight in a duel. Like, the duels are super awesome, but how cool would it have just been to see him, like, just demolish some Tuskens, or, like, kill Runehako or something? just to disarm right. him. But yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Shall we move on to episode 2?
Yeah, I think...
Did you guys have anything else you wanted to say for episode 1?
I'm good. Joe?
Okay. No, I'm cool.
Yeah. I think, again, just to kind of the general point, Jason, that I think Joe and I were kind of getting at for episode two, obviously the big general point is it should have been a relationship story about Anakin and Obi-Wan, why they're, you know, how they're such close friends, how, you know, it should have been about their camaraderie and their how close they've become, and that friendship should have been the main focus of episode two, as opposed to this awkward romance. You know, splitting them up for the majority of the movie was awkward. Didn't do anything for their relationship. And also, I think the other big point is obviously the Tusken camp stuff. We talked a lot about that, you know, like having Obi-Wan know about it, potentially being there, Anakin being there with Owen. So again, to create some sense of relationship between Anakin and Owen, besides what we currently had. And I think those were the big points. Joe, did I miss anything?
No, that was about it.
I think it would have been good to have a more Anakin Obi-Wan relationship central stuff towards the first half of the movie, and then split them up around the halfway point and have Anakin's focus start turning to Padme. Because then when he gets to the Tuskens and he confides that in Padme, but then he doesn't confide that in Obi-Wan at the end of the movie when they're reunited, then we start going, that's interesting. You know, I think that would have been something that would have been good. And I know you brought up more Dooku scenes, and I had sort of an idea to add in a Dooku scene that would have done a lot to set up all of this other stuff. And after the attempt on Padme's life, and after you get the chase through Coruscant and stuff, you go back to the Jedi Council, and they're finishing up a meeting, you know, a holoconference, whatever, with Dooku. And Dooku's sort of trying to appease the Jedi about the Separatists, or maybe even, you know, throw out the hint that maybe the Jedi should join the Separatists. And maybe this scene could be placed earlier. I don't know yet. I haven't had a chance to really figure this out. But then at the end of it, when the Jedi refuse Dooku's offer, he says, well, maybe you should know that the Republic has a secret army, you know, on Kamino. And why would you tell us? Well, maybe you'll need it. And he cuts the communication. And Obi-Wan is there, and Anakin is there. And so the council goes, okay, well, we need to protect Senator Amidala, because that's what this meeting was supposed to be about. But after this information from Dooku, we're going to have to split you two up. Obi-Wan, go figure out what the heck this army is about. Anakin, you're going to have to protect the senator. And that's when they separate. And it's not, you know, this sort of, oh, well, you know, I will talk with her, you know, scene. Although we would have had to get another bit with Palpatine and Anakin in there. I don't know how it would all work. But that way you don't have Obi-Wan present for the Tusken scene, because I don't think Obi-Wan should be present for the Tusken scene. Because that needs to be the first secret Anakin keeps from Obi-Wan. That needs to be the very first secret Anakin keeps from Obi-Wan. I think it would be great if Owen was there. And that would have been, you know, and Carl, you know, I've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. I think that would have been a really great addition, because then, you know, Owen gets his fear of the Jedi with Anakin. But then, obviously, the whole romance stuff, you just got to tweak those scenes and get a little bit less wooden performance out of the actors, and that would have been much different with the movie. I'm not gonna sugarcoat that. I'm not gonna lie that those the dialogue and the performances in those scenes could have used some help, shall we say. but I do think that Obi-Wan can't know about the Tusken attack, because that needs to be the first big secret that Anakin keeps from him. But I do think it would have been good to have, you know, a little extra stuff between Anakin and Obi-Wan at the beginning of Attack of the Clones, show that they do have this great camaraderie, this great relation, master-apprentice relationship. But this is something that Anakin can't figure out himself, but he doesn't want to tell Obi-Wan because he knows it's bad. And so he confides in Padme, and that sort of soothes his conscience a little bit. So he doesn't tell Obi-Wan when they meet up. And, you know, and Obi-Wan could say, "So, anything exciting happen on Tatooine?" "No." You know, you could get that sort of thing. I think that would have been interesting. Because, yeah, that needs to be the first thing that sort of shows that there's a chink in that armor between the two of them.
So. Sure.
I dig that a lot.
Yeah.
I dig that a whole lot. A whole lot more than what we were talking about. I think as long as we got a little bit more bro time between the two of them,
yeah,
and then splitting it up, like, that would make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that way you don't have the whole, you know, Kamino saber dart issue. Mm. You can just, you know, get, you know, with Dooku saying, "Yeah, there's an arm. The Republic's got a secret army. You should know about this," you know. And then the Jedi Council could say, well, you know, could debate between themselves, well, is Dooku really trying to help us because he's a former Jedi, but, you know, he's a separatist? And so they could start the whole questioning about what his motivations are. And then we figure out at the end of the movie he's a Sith, you know, and that gets, you know, interesting. So I think that sort of a setup would have been really interesting. And there would be a little bit less time devoted to, well, what is this thing? And maybe when Obi-Wan meets Jango, he sees something that was like left behind by Zam, and then he realizes, oh, there's a connection between this person that's making the clones for us and the person that's assassinating, you know, trying to assassinate Padme. And so that's what gets him to Geonosis, mm-hmm. Rather than him going there looking for it. So, sure.
Well,
that would have been my idea.
I just have a comment about the hollow acting. How can you call this hollow acting?
The closer I get to you, the worse it gets. The thought of not being with you. I can't breathe.
Ugh, so good. I don't care. I love that line.
I know you do. I know you do. And the line is fine. The line is fine.
I think it's delivered pretty well, too. And he has his moments.
I will grant it. He has his moments, and I'm a defender of you know, a lot of this stuff. So I will grant you that. But some of the other scenes definitely could have used some help.
Oh hell yeah, yeah. Won't debate that.
I think they're all perfect. You guys are crazy.
All right. Where's Joe Hogan? Why is Jason Hunt replacing him? No, I like that point too, Jason, though. Like, you know, I'm fine with them getting split up maybe halfway through the movie.
Because
mm-hmm. You don't need the whole movie to show us how close they are. But even if you just spend like the first half hour of the movie just showing how close they are with some like mm-hmm. really key solid scenes. Again, like the only time we see them together as we have it, it's just them bickering. There really isn't a friendship there. It's a dad scolding his child constantly.
Maybe what happens is Anakin and Obi-Wan are sent to go protect Padme, and then we get the scene, you know, they take off, they're heading to Naboo, and then we get the scene between Dooku and the Council, and Obi-Wan has to, you know, right after they land on Naboo, Obi-Wan is sent to go figure out what's going on with Kamino because it's in the area or something, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe we could do that. Maybe that would have been better.
Yeah,
so.
I like that. Yeah.
So, anywho, did you guys have any other points for episode 2?
Our episode 2 was kind of one big point that we just kind of supported with other little points.
Yeah, lots of big points, yeah. Yeah.
And I know Carl still doesn't like Yoda fighting with a lightsaber.
not at all. Cheapens the character. I'll say that till the day I die.
No, I don't think it changes the character.
Oh, no. I said it cheapens, not just changes.
Oh, cheapens. Cheapens, maybe. Maybe, but...
I don't... Like,
Yoda's a very different person in the prequels than he is in the OT. And you know, him using a lightsaber, especially in episode 2, I think is needed. Maybe in episode 3, you know, we could have done without the lightsaber. But I think episode 2, you know, I think that's needed. Because he's a very different person. And he hasn't, you know, had his entire, you know, his entire belief system shoved in his face as a failure as it crumbles around him yet. So
sure. Sure. But I still don't think – I don't think him using a lightsaber makes sense.
The other thing with Dooku though is that they are former master and apprentice, and mm-hmm. so there's sort of that code of honor between the two of them, and so you know the sword is a gentleman's weapon. So especially the way that they use it with the fencing, you know, Count mm-hmm. Dooku especially, and so it's almost like, all right, there's this former relationship that we've had for old time's sake. We'll do it this way. A sort of mentality that goes into that duel, I think. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, that's the last thing I wanted to say about that because I love that duel. Oh my gosh. I love that duel. Do. And you said that Count Dooku's, you know,
it is obvious that this contest cannot be decided by our knowledge of the Force, but by our skills with the lightsaber.
That's worse.
That's
than
a cheesy line. It's the that worst, is a cheesy line.
It's worse than any Hayden Christensen line in the love scenes.
No,
it sounds cool because it's Christopher Lee's voice, but it's so
kidding me. That line happens, and I get all a tingle because I'm like, the awesome crap is about to go down. So
cheesy.
Carl,
it says to the audience,
"I will slap you for that." When we get to Celebration,
it's a disrespectful line to the fans. Like, hey, idiots, get ready to be excited.
What?
Sorry.
What are you talking about, Carl?
Hey, idiots, you ready to be real excited?
Hey, dumb guys.
Hey, dummies. Here it comes. I don't like it.
I guess I'm that dummy.
You're not. You're not the dummy. They're telling you you're the dummy. You're not the dummy.
Oh, well, then, but I get excited about that line, so called me a dummy.
That's fair.
Words, not his.
Yeah, your words. I'm not calling anybody a dummy. I just think it's a dumb line. So.
No, it's not. You are completely mistaken.
Can you just imagine Vader saying to Luke as he's walking up the steps in Empire Strikes Back, "Well, I guess we better use our lightsabers." Like, that's like, that'd be the capacity of how stupid that is. Obviously. So, but again, in my take on Attack of the Clones, there wouldn't be a reason for that line because Yoda wouldn't even pull out a lightsaber unless he was pulling it from a fanny pack. It's the only way I'd like it. It's the only way I'll take Yoda's lightsaber is fanny pack Yoda.
You've missed that conversation, Joe.
Did I though? Did I really miss a whole lot?
Oh man! So why don't we just hit on a couple episode 3 points?
Yes.
Because Joe's got to get going here. Joe, we didn't have a whole lot for this one. Neither of us.
For me, my big ones were the kind of rapid fires at the end. Like, let's see Qui-Gon's ghost. Let's have Padme have a better death than losing the will to live. And let's get that. For my own preference, let's see Vader really laying the smackdown on some Jedi as Vader and show that he's still a threat, that he's not while his power may be handicapped a bit, he's still a Jedi killing machine. Let's see some of that, because we don't really see it in the original trilogy. We just kind of see him beating up on the on the normies. So
yeah,
that last one was more of I would have really loved to see this, but not so much a criticism.
Right
yeah. Qui-Gon's ghost, I completely agree with that. Would have been a great scene. They did the previz for it, but Liam Neeson wasn't available because he got into a car accident, motorcycle accident, something.
He wasn't filming Taken 7 or something.
No, not at that time.
figure Taken's going to be the next like Fast and Furious series. There's going to be like 30 of them.
How many times can you get Taken?
Oh goodness. But yeah,
put a lock on your door. Avoid this whole thing. Sorry, go ahead, Jason. Stupid.
Oh goodness, that's awesome. No, but yeah, I agree. Qui-Gon's ghost would have been awesome to have there. Padme, yeah. Other than just losing the will to live. There's a theory going around, and I read it, but I don't remember all the details about it. There's a theory going around that Palpatine had something to do with her death. Mm. That he sort of, you know, drained the life out of her from across the galaxy to, you know, as Anakin was being put into the suit. And I wish I could remember who said this and where I saw it and what all the details were, but there was somebody that like had actual evidence in the movie to support this. And it was maybe slightly stretching, but it wasn't like too serious, because I remember one point is, you know, how does Palpatine know that Padme is dead, you know, when he tells Anakin? You know, obviously she's just died when he tells Vader, you know, that you killed her. But how does Palpatine know that? So I think if they had played that up, maybe Palpatine sort of having some sort of, you know, Sith, you know, voodoo stuff, whatever. I don't know.
Mother Talzin shows up.
Yeah. But to try to, you know, drain the life out of Padme. And I think somebody took it a step further and said that he was taking the life from Padme to keep Anakin alive. I think somebody did that or suggested that on a podcast that was discussing the article. And I think that would have been, you know, better. The droid wouldn't have known what to call it. And so, you know, she's lost the will to live. You know, the droid has no idea what the Force is and how that works. So don't take the droid's word for it. But yeah, that was an interesting theory. And I think could have been, you know, really played up. If they went that way, I like the idea of Vader going and being badass at the end of the movie. However, I really love the way that whole sequence is shot and is done at the end of Revenge of the Sith. It's really beautiful and it's really awesome, and so I don't want to change it. So. Just the entire like last minute and a half of, you know, no dialogue, just the different shots and the music, I think is a wonderful, beautiful way to go out. And I think it would have been cool to maybe get a shot or two of Vader, you know, marching troops across a planet or something, in there, instead of maybe. Maybe in addition to some of the stuff that we got, would have been nice. But I really love the way that they end Revenge of the Sith. So, you know, after Padme has died.
yeah.
So I don't know how much I'd want to touch that, tamper with that. So,
what about a post-credit scenes a la the event?
Yeah.
About that one,
a new Marvel event, yeah. I still think, you know, keeping Padme alive at the end of Revenge of the Sith would have been a good idea, but they didn't, and that's fine. I'm fine with her dying at the end. I don't care. Again, like all of us agree on, it should have been something better than the losing the will to live,
right?
But I just think it does.
And you can only take that explanation so far, because I've always suspected there was something to do with the Force in her death, and the droid doesn't know how to measure that or take that into account. And so I've always sort of taken that line, you know, she's lost the will to live, with a grain of salt, because it's the medical droid and he doesn't know what the crap he's talking about. So,
right. Well, cause that's not even a medical explanation anyway. A medical droid wouldn't say something that's completely unmedical. Like, right. Like that would be
Shakespearean.
Yeah. Like she's lost the will to live. Like they don't have the ability to analyze that information. Right, Jason? Like you just said, that's a good point.
Right. Right. So I don't think the droid really knows what he's talking about. He's just trying to make up an explanation because he doesn't know why she's dying. She's just dying. So,
her midichlorians are dropping.
Oh, man.
But I know you guys mentioned that, you know, more scenes with Padme would have been good, and I've always been a proponent of that. So
Oh yeah. But Joe, we know you got to get going.
Mm-hmm.
Jason and I will wrap this up in a minute ourselves. But Joe, thanks for coming on again. I appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me, and thank you, Larians, for putting up with me yet again.
Thank you for having this discussion with Carl that I had so much to say about. So
we're glad because when we were talking about first doing it, Carl had mentioned that you felt like you didn't really have a whole lot to say about like what you would want to change or like what you were expecting. So like I'm glad that like I kind of wish we did it in the first place, all the three of us together. One big ultimate conversation, but no, I'm glad that it resonated with you and it got you thinking too. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, it was great. Cool. Awesome. And Joe, we will keep in touch, and I cannot wait to see your ugly mug at Celebration. So
back at you, but Carl, on the other hand, I can wait. I can wait on Carl.
John, I'll see you next week. Get ready.
Well, I'm going to see Carl next week. So
yeah. I'm going down to visit my boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. All right, kidding. Jen. Thank you much.
Hey, Joe. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
Have a good night. Bye.
Jason, I almost hung up on the actual call, too. I was like, wait, we're not done.
Oops. Oh, boy.
Dissing Natson.
So, but yeah, that was an awesome discussion.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm glad that you – I figured you'd have points. Because I know, you know, I mentioned on the last show, Jason, that you are obviously the PT guy of this podcast, which is great. That's why I love podcasting with you. Because as I said on the last show, if I did a podcast with Joe, it'd be so boring because we'd just be saying the same things. and I love that we have such.
We can handle that. We can handle that in small doses, but an entire podcast.
Yeah, that's what's just so good. Like we have just very different visions of what we'd like, and I think it's so great because I think. There are a lot of people that would, you know, be like, oh, yeah, I totally get what Carl's saying. And there's probably so many of the Larians who are like, no, I totally get what Jason's saying. And it's not about opposing each other because we have what we have and there's no changing that.
right.
And this was more of just a sense of like, oh, well, what if this, right? You know, it was just and I'll, you know, Jason, I'll say to you. So I put Joe on the spot when he was on last time about doing like a prequels resolutions. And he and I have been talking a little bit about that in the last week. And, you know, once his schedule frees up a bit more, we're seriously thinking about taking a couple of those little story ideas that we had. So maybe like the Tusken camp slaughter scene and like adding something with Owen there.
Nice.
And maybe like something with Obi-Wan meeting Anakin and Phantom Menace and changing that a bit. So just some little things like that. Just me writing a little story and Joe then illustrating it. I think that might be a lot of fun.
Cool.
So yeah. And it won't change anything. It's just for the fun of it. I mean, I've never tried my hand at fan fiction and I'm not much of a writer, but now that I'm so into comics and Joe's kind of been a catalyst for that, like I think that'd be really fun to work. So
you and I can start, you know, we can flesh out the stories and how we want it and we can give it to Joe.
Exactly.
So
we'll be like,
unless
the end
George
of,
Lucas
yeah.
comes out of retirement and decides he wants to do a prequel special edition. These are the movies we got and you can't change it. Yeah. So.
And actually he wouldn't be able to, he doesn't own it anymore.
So. I think if you said, all right, excuse me, can I do a special edition for the prequels? Disney would say yes.
I think they'd say no. I really do. That's the type of business Disney runs. I don't think they'd let him. I think they'd be like, sorry, George, you're old and crazy, man.
well, it would have to be after, you know, the sequel trilogy was done and the films that they've got set out right now. It'd have to be after those were all done.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they wouldn't let him do it before then, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true.
But, so anyway, Jason, we say we wrap this up.
Yeah. No, that was awesome. Matchup. That's what I was trying to say.
Oh, yeah, don't worry. I wasn't going to forget.
Yeah, no, I was going to lead us into that. But the matchup for next episode, we didn't get quite as many responses for the team matchup. As we would have liked, with all the moving and school and everything, I got the post up late this weekend, and the weekend is a horrible time to post things on Facebook because nobody sees them. So we're going to extend this one more week. If you want to weigh in on the matchup, our team matchup, it is Team Jason. Then I have R2-D2, Zeb Aurelius, Jar Jar Binks, Cad Bane, Hondo Ohnaka, and Mara Jade as the Emperor's Hand on my team. And Carl, you have on Team Carl?
I have Han Solo, Chewbacca,
Dash Rendar,
Boba Fett, Embo, And just to appease Michael Cohen, I'm going to trade out General Grievous for Princess Leia.
You can't do that.
Blast. So Cohen's trying to make me sound like I'm some sort of sexist. But he's like, I'm going to pick Team Jason because he has a woman. Okay, fine. I'll stick with Grievous.
Well, Grievous is a bit of a lady. He runs away. No, but most of the ladies we see in Star Wars don't run away, no. So I don't know what the heck that makes Grievous.
He's a coward.
Exactly.
Just a coward. But yes, that is our current matchup.
And how can they weigh in on this, should they so desire?
Well, of course, Facebook. Facebook.com/Wampa's Lair Podcast. They can follow us on Twitter and tweet it there if they want. At Wampa's Lair, or send us an email at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes. And the post is on the Facebook page and it is on Twitter. So if you haven't seen it yet, just go to our pages and respond to it, there.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. We're not going to have a Lair inquiry today because, Joe had to head out and Carl has to, wind things up too on his end. But next episode, we will get to a couple of your Larian inquiries, so be sure to keep sending those in to the same places as we just said. Is there anything else that you want to get to before we wrap up this episode, Carl?
No, Jason. I'm just really sad that your new home is not in Boston.
I can understand that.
Jason, it's going to be 43 degrees out tomorrow. I'm going to go suntanning. I mean, after it's been like the teens and the 20s for like 2 months, this is going to be like a heat wave.
It was the mid 60s today instead of 80, so that was kind of nice. That's nice. It was raining yesterday. Everybody else in the country is getting snow, and we're getting rain. So
I'll take rain over snow any day. Well, except for at Christmas time.
Yes.
All right. So this episode of The Wampa's Lair brought to you by WeatherChannel.com.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Tell them we sent you. No. And with that, this wraps up our latest episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. It's been episode number 120, Prequel Dreams Special Edition. Be sure to check out all the other awesome podcasts of the StarWarsReport.com Second Airborne Division at StarWarsReport.com, and be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.
Believe me, I wish that I could just wish away my feelings, but I can't.